Hello, namaste, adab, zindabad. Welcome to another episode of Fursat Feminism. I'm Arundhati.
I'm Deepa.
This week, we have a very special guest with us. I've been wanting Tasafi to come on the podcast for so long because I remember one of the first conversations we had when we met in Nepal was so incredibly warm, vulnerable, and an important milestone in my journey of being a feminist. So Tasafi is here. Hi, Tasafi. Thank you for coming.
Hi, Tasafi.
Hi. I'm so excited. Like, it took us forever to plan this.
Yeah. So Tasafi is based in Bangladesh. She's an activist, a facilitator, does all manners of wonderful work. And I've had the fortune of crossing paths professionally with her. And I think I keep using this podcast as a medium to reconnect with all the cool people I know. So today, Tasafi wants to talk about living alone. And I think this is going to be interesting because of how Deepa and I are also placed with this specific topic. But let's start off with you. What drew you to this and what made you want to talk about it?
You know, when you asked, you're like, what would you like to talk about? And I was thinking about all these different things that we usually talk about, you know, especially when we're talking about feminism, working, things like that. And then I was thinking about my personal spaces. And of course, the first thing that always comes up is where you live, how you live, who you live with. I mean, that's like a conversation you keep on having with whoever you meet, whether it's in a professional space, whether it's a personal space, whether, you know, one of those questions people ask even on Tinder as like one of the first questions. And I find it so annoying. Like, don't ask people who they live with.
Yeah.
So yeah, that just struck me. And I guess with COVID, I think that was also one thing of actually recognizing how much of the space you're in all the time. And then, you know, everybody talking about their lives in their own spaces and the pros and cons of living alone. I think that also like became very obvious and clear in many ways, I think. And I mean, even now in Bangladesh, it's still uncommon for women to be living alone. So whenever we are, it does come up somewhere, then there's always that question of, but why? Like, not even why as a concern, more like, why? What is your problem? Kind of a question, right? So yeah, it just seems like something that is still needing a conversation. I always say, like, I think I left home when I left for my university. And when I came back and moved back into the house, it never again felt like my place. So it was always like waiting to get out of there and getting back into my space again. I think a big part of that is just, you know, like how you clean, how you like your things, how you like to cook for yourself and all of that. So I think as soon as I moved back to Dhaka at that point, I think this was in 2012, I sort of knew that I will move out and get my place. It was just a matter of getting everybody else comfortable with this concept. And I think that's the negotiation we do all the time. And, you know, especially in our society, trying to figure that out. Like, when is this right time to do this? And I get asked this a lot because, you know, that's also another thing. People always assume like, oh, you probably don't get along with your family. That's why you have to live alone. So I always do say this, like, no, like by the time I actually did move out completely, I had set that stage. Like, and I always say this to people. I'm like, it was very strategic. I took a year to like get everybody comfortable with this concept. So once I started freelancing, I got a place where I would be working. So a lot of times I'd be staying there all day, sometimes at night when I'm working late or if I'm going out also late. And I took a year of doing that before they got used to this concept. And then when I did move and get the place, they were sort of like, oh, like when I started getting things for the house, they're like, wait, I'm not going to be staying here anymore.
So the slow move out of the house has started.
Very much so, like a step-by-step progression into this living situation. But yeah, I think that was a very intentional thing to get people be comfortable with that. So by the time I did move out, by the time I did have my place, it was there was no real like, did not see this coming. Oh my God, why are you doing this? I mean, I got that from other people, but not so much from my direct family.
It's so interesting that you mentioned Tinder. Like on Tinder also, they'll ask, who do you live with? And I'm just like, oh my God, that's an angle that I hadn't even thought of. That's like,
well, I have had so many of these conversations where I'm just like, you don't ask people that. Like, why would you ask a random woman who doesn't know you, who you live with? Like, I don't want to answer that question. I don't want you to know who I live with. I have not even met you. I don't even know if you're a safe person.
It's really funny because I, you know, when you mentioned you wanted to talk about living alone, I was talking to Deepa and I told her, this is the first time I'm realizing that I haven't lived alone. Okay. Okay, I have felt all my life that I'm this incredibly independent person with a very strong sense of boundaries, with a very strong sense of like personal space. But I realized just the act of actually living singularly, just alone. I mean, I've lived with friends. I have lived in dorms of hostels. I have lived, you know, in all of these spaces. But I have never lived completely by myself. And I think the reason it had never struck me kind of like that was because from the very beginning, because my parents had jobs that made them leave the home a lot, I was home alone a lot. And then I was obviously in the flat that I was with friends, had a room to myself, and it felt kind of my own space, right? Like for the first time, not answerable to anybody else, that feeling. But completely by myself, no experience. It's so interesting what things I have chosen to navigate and what things I haven't. So I wanted to live in Baroda because I really like the city where my parents live and it was close to where I work and it made a lot of sense, etc. But the only way to justify sort of being in the same city and living away from my parents, and I wish I had had this conversation with you to have all the cheat codes, but but basically was, I was really, really at my wit's end. And I remember one of the first decisions I took with Manoj, who's my partner, was, you need to come here because we need to get our own space. It just inherently never struck me that that is something that, and I think that is twofold. Of course, one is, of course, being a woman and all this stigma attached to that. The other is, of course, being South Asian and this expectation that you live with your family, that you're a part of the family unit, that walking away from your family is somehow a great betrayal. But a third part of that whole thing, I think, was also, there's a very middle class sort of financial thing of, if you already have a house, how can you be like spending rent on another whole space in the same city or even in another city? Like, why don't you just go stay in a hostel or with a bunch of people? When can you fully justify one person renting out an entire space, right? Like, that was just something that I never felt fully confident or comfortable about.
Yeah, I mean, no, I have a lot of experience in the sense that I have had experience with both the situations, right? So like the one that Arundhati is describing of like being forced into a situation there where you have to be alone because your parents are out. This is not a decision. This is not a choice.
Correct.
This is just
Correct.
Something that happens to you.
Yeah, yeah.
You are just on the receiving end of being alone. And then the conscious decision of being by yourself in a space. And I think the first conversation I remember had happened when we were doing A Room of One's Own.
Yeah.
And Arundhati and I were having a conversation how like living alone and having your own space are not the same thing. I mean, you can have your own space while not living alone as well. And you can live alone and not have your own space as well. So, you know, I very recently started living alone. And, you know, the interesting thing is that, I mean, I never thought about the fact that if I had decided to live in the same city as my family, how would that look like? Because that conversation just didn't happen. Like very automatically, I just thought of switching my city. I was like, there's the family part that you guys have discussed a lot. But there's another angle to it that when I came here and started looking for places, people who are renting out houses are not very comfortable with you saying that, you know, I just want to rent a house because I want to live here. That's it. No, you have to give a reason as a single woman. Why do you want to live by yourself? And why do you want to live here? And what are the causes for you to be in this situation where you're supposed to be living in a different city without your parents? Like when I came here and I started living here and the pandemic hit, and I remember my landlord coming up to me and it's like, oh, you're very brave. I don't know how you are living by yourself. Everyone would have gone back to their homes. And I'm like, yeah, but I really can't go back to my home, you know, like, because that's the understanding that you have to go back to some home that you're supposed to have. This is not supposed to be your home. You know,
yeah.
You can't call this your home.
Yeah.
And he's like, akeli ladkiyan aise kahan reh paati hain? And I'm like, okay.
Akeli ladki khuli tijori ki tarah hoti hai, Deepa.
Yeah, exactly. there's so much adulting that you need to do to be able to take that kind of decision, right? That you want to live alone. It comes with a hell lot of challenges that you have to deal
with.
Very
much so.
Even now, like, I've lived here in this house for 6 months, and I've not had a very great experience of living all by myself because I was very, very excited while I was coming here. But there were certain things where I started really struggling because I just felt like I had lost all my support system in this town, at least. Because I think if you have people around you at some distance to just act as your support mechanism, it's very, very important to have that, even if you want to live all by yourself. And that's something I realized quite late that was not a foresight that I had.
Yeah, you know, like this challenge is my friend also, and she moved to Netherlands around the same time that I moved into this place. She was also talking about this, especially during COVID. Like, she's like, everyone's so used to living with as couples, especially in our age group, regardless of where you are.
Yeah.
It's like people don't recognize how much I have to do. Because I live alone. Like, you know, you have to do all your cleaning. There's no, like, you know, sharing of work at all. That, I think, was something that I really thought of during COVID. Full-time, I was engaged in full-time work at that point. So, you know, it was like calls and calls and calls. And everyone here is used to having either people helping at home or at least spouses or someone who's doing something or the other. And I was like, I don't have that. Like, when I say I have to, like, prepare lunch, it means I have to actually go and prepare lunch and then eat it. And then I can come back on a call. Like, I can't do 10 minutes break and just run and go eat and come back because no one's fixing my food for me. And these are just things which are, nobody thinks about that because everyone's used to having someone or the other there. That is, I think, one of the things which really hit me during the pandemic. Like, you have to really, like, get into people's heads very specifically that I live alone, which means these are all the things that I need to consider. Otherwise, it just doesn't occur to people what that means.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, from basic things like the electricity bill and to your, you know, gas cylinders. I mean, you can calculate all of that, but when you actually start living like that, I think it gets to you. There were times when I would just love my space and I have had people over for like 5 days or 7 days or 8 days and I would wait for them to leave so that I can have my house back to myself. But then there were also times where I would be like, oh, I just wish somebody was there here. I mean, just for this 1 day or 2 days, just so that I can for once not think about my house at this point. Because I genuinely think the house becomes a personality of its own when you're just living with the house, you know.
I mean, there are times when I spend like 4 days at my parents, especially like say if there's the festival Eid or something, and then I just go and I'm like, by the fifth day, I'm like, okay, I need to just go back. I just need like my empty house. And I just want to walk into my empty house, turn on my lights and just like sit there and do nothing. Like, I just want to feel my empty house. Especially at the beginning of the pandemic, I think I had friends who got stuck in Dhaka. So my friend, her one-year-old child and her husband, they moved in with me for about a month. And then after they left, I kind of stayed on my own for almost a month. And then I went to my parents and stayed there for like 2 weeks. And my parents' house has like my cousins also in the same building. So we were all like hanging out on the roof and stuff like that. And that was one of those times when I was like, oh my God, this is like the huge difference. Like when you're be able to see people face to face. At that time, you know, you're just home by yourself and like the only interactions you're having are largely work calls. And it was just such, like, I did not expect to feel how different it felt to be actually around people, having face to face conversations, just, you know, eating together and things like that. So of course, there's so much value to having that. I know what you said, Deepa, about support systems. I think that was actually something I thought about consciously when I moved by myself, because I was also working independently, so I didn't need to go into work every day. And I get very comfortable like not talking to people. So at the beginning, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to become like a hermit. I will never feel like going out anywhere. Consciously, I decided, I was like, no, at least once a week, I will make sure I go meet friends or they come over or something. So I think that really made a lot, this concept of having my space and still have regular interactions, either with family or with friends. I think that was very important to have that.
Yeah. The selective socialization is so important.
Oh my God, yes.
There's so much emotional labor that you're constantly doing in your social interactions as a woman. And I think the expectation of you, if you're placed in a social situation, in a family situation, is so incredibly high to be sort of emotionally present and responding and engaged, that why it never felt like, you know, my own, as you said, it just, when you go back, why does, actually, even before I left, I never felt like the house was mine. I've always referred to it as their house. And it never felt completely like I could dictate my terms of interacting with the world, as well as my terms of how my space would be immediately around me. And you know, I feel like certain cultures and certain societies are designed for people to live alone. So there are systems are easier.
Yeah. The first time that I lived alone for a year just after my college, when I joined Anandi, the organization where Anandati and I were working together. And I was located in this place called Madia. I would like keep telling them, everybody around me in that place, that I want a house of my own. Like, I want a room at least where I can be by myself. After office, I want to go back to my home. And nobody sort of could comprehend that why would a girl want to live alone in this town? And a couple of other people that I was working with were also coming from such communities where their understanding was that if women are living together, at least six of you or five of you should live together, take care of yourself, because for your safety, at least you will need more people around you. After that, somehow I managed to get a house. And when I did, what I started realizing is that there is that thing of, you know, you being able to have a house and a space and coming back to that house, and you don't have your parents around, you don't have other people around to ask you questions or whatever. But the rest of the colony would always keep an eye on me, that where is she going? What is she doing? Who is she meeting? You know, that I realized was a very different level of surveillance. Exact same thing I sort of faced when I came here also. I don't know why this time though I had a choice. I still decided to come to like a smaller town. I've always loved small towns. So I was like, I live in a smaller town. It feels very much closer to my space. That's the thing, like that Arundhati is saying, no, that maybe like in metros or in like cities, there is still some level of freedom in flat systems or in structures where your landlords or communities around you are not bothered about you as much as they are in smaller towns. Because they just presume that now that your parents are not around, it's our responsibility to sort of keep an eye on you. And it's so much more irritating, because with parents, though, at least I could like have some sense of entitlement and like fight with them and tell them to just shut up and mind their own business. But with my landlady, I don't know how to do that. Because I'm like, if I do that, she'll throw me out of the house, and where will I go for now?
No, in Dhaka, this is a huge issue. Like you said, people don't even want to rent to single women. I mean, they wouldn't even let you like come see a place if you're like, oh, I'm just looking for a place for myself. I was lucky to be in a place where this wasn't an issue. It's probably one of the reasons I've stayed here for so long. But even now, when I hear of young women looking for places, or just women, not, it doesn't even have to be young. Like, you can be 40 and looking for a place with your child even, and people will be like, but no, why do you need a place for yourself, kind of a thing. So, yeah, I mean, we were just going to this post recently. Someone posted in one of these groups saying, can I get like a husband for hire just so I can like get a flat to live in?
Oh my God, this is a business idea. Somebody who's listening to this podcast needs to get on this pronto.
I have this activist who always says, like, you know, if you're a woman anywhere, there will always be people who need to be your guardians.
Your safety is such a huge concern for everybody.
Like, this is reminding me of one of my ex-boyfriends used to be an IITian, and he used to live alone in Mumbai. But the big problem at that time was bachelors ko ghar nahi milta, right? Like, ladkon ko ghar nahi milta. Like, boys are specifically discriminated against was his whole sort of tirade at that time. And I think it's a very different kind of struggle, those two specific sort of ways of going about looking for a home. And I can't even imagine what it must mean for, you know, somebody who's transgender or non-binary to even start to think about this, right? Because I know that somebody very, very famous with like extreme clout right now in Delhi has been looking for a simple 2BHK that they can stay in for the last 2 months at least. We talk about women-friendly houses or men-friendly houses, but trans-friendly houses, I mean, non-binary-friendly, how do you even start to navigate some of these? So I kept feeling every time he was complaining about not getting a flat, a lot of it was around, okay, bachelors aate hain, toh, they'll leave the house very dirty or they don't know what they'll do with the house. That is the fear with you know, men and boys. But the presumption with not giving a woman a house is so many more things, right? Like, ki, achha nahi, but you will be unsafe. Fir tumhari zimmedari hum pe aa jayegi. I'm like, no. You are giving me a house. You know, this does not in any way is not telling you to become my guardian. It's not telling you to like become this keeper of all of my izzat.
When people also hear that you live alone, it's also this expectation like, ooh, you must be like a more modern woman. That's why you live alone. I don't know, when they talk, think about you as a modern woman, it means you're definitely a lot more, you know, out there, you party, you have sex. Like, it's all these assumptions that also come in there, right? So like, especially in the beginning few years, I used to be really particular about who I do mention this to, like that I live alone, especially in work spaces, because there would be this whole instant like assumption of who I am and what kind of a woman I must be.
Actually, you know, so in UP, where I come from, as a teenager, I'd heard this many, many times because my elder sister was planning to get out, so move out from our house and go into a hostel for further studies. And there were conversations around, like not for her, but like general conversations at her that during marriage in North India, if a girl has lived in a hostel, it's harder for her to get married than it is for girls who've lived in their houses. So they prefer girls who've not gone to hostels because hostel mein jaake ladkiyan bigad jati hain. Basically, if you're stepping out of your parents' house, you are not a marriage material anymore. If you plan to live alone, then to you're done. I mean, there's no way. Even when I was living alone, you know, and the kind of character assassination that would happen just because I was living alone was unbelievable. Like, I would laugh at it, but they would just keep coming and they'd be like, oh, she's living alone because she wants to drink. And like, if you want to drink in Gujarat, toh it's a big deal. And she was living alone because she wants to have men over, or she's living alone because then she wants to make it a space for other girls and their boyfriends to be able to come over. And I'm like,
and this hyper-sexualization of, yes, women that live alone. No, I remember in the many communities that my parents work in, lots of single women have sort of left whatever work they were doing and gone and sort of built their own, literally built their houses by hand and live by themselves. Of course, it requires incredible courage to do that in that space, to sort of break against the grain, all of that. But what is definitely sort of layered on top of that is there's a litany of men that will take it upon themselves to protect you. And then you are, as a result of that, you are sexualized. Essentially, all your work boils down to the fact of who are you sleeping with and how you're able to do all this because you live by yourself and because there is nobody else to control you.
Yeah.
That was always the narrative around the women that lived alone. And that was so all-pervasive, I think, in my mind also. I also judge these women, I mean, growing up, because that's what you inherit. And then you have to unlearn so much of that and be like, oh God, you know, these are just women literally who wanted a space of their own and were not willing to get married or to live with their natal families to carve out that space.
Yeah, I think this every time. There's like this meme. It's just something like, you grow up and you realize like the aunts or like the women in your families that everybody called crazy, we're just not crazy. We just wanted to do things their way. Like, you know, they were just independent or whatever. And I think about this so often nowadays. Maybe probably I'm getting at that to that age where I'm the aunt. So like, obviously, nobody was going around announcing the fact to like my extended family and things like that, that I've moved out, I'm living alone and all of that, right? So when there was this one time that all my cousins came over, and then so one of my uncles dropped his daughters. And then the next time I saw him at a family event, and he's like, "So I hear you live by yourself." And I was like, "Yes." And he's like, "But why?" I just want to. There is no big why. He's like, "But no, you have a place here at your parents." And I was like, "Yes." And I also come here. I also stay here sometimes. And it was like this conversation, like, if you live alone, how will your cousins get married? Kind of a conversation. I was like,
wow, that is wow. A lot.
And so, you know, it's not even like your sexuality or your reputation which matters. It's like everyone connected to you. It's just instilling that guilt from very early on. So, you know, you hear about all the crazy women and then you start wondering
which part of the narrative you will be fit into. Where is the male equivalent of any of these tropes? Please tell. Of course, men are generally incapable of leading lives alone because of just how much domestic and emotional labor is expected of women in heterosexual relationships. But still, like, where is the male equivalent of, like, the crazy cat lady? I mean, because this is such a trope, right? Like, people are so afraid, I'm going to become the crazy cat lady. That's the big fear that is shown to single women. Ki matlab tum, you'll become that woman living alone in this big house with lots of cats. And I'm like, that does not sound half bad. Like, that sounds pretty great now.
Also, like, I think, I mean, at least in Indian context, I can say that the state is also not very well prepared for something like a woman wanting to live alone, right? So you have to justify it. Either if you're a divorcee, if you're a single woman like that, like if you've been married and then not married, then it's okay. But otherwise, so for example, I needed to get a gas connection. So my father has a ration card and I don't, like, my name is there in his ration card. And I was just trying to get a ration card for myself. And these people, these officials just couldn't understand that. Why would you need a ration card? And they would sit me down and make me explain to me that, like, let it be with your father and then you will eventually get married and then wo fir se aapko karna padega. So I was constantly told that aise blackmail le lo, why will you need it? Get a house where there's already a cylinder or ask your landlady. But me trying to get a gas cylinder for myself is something that nobody is prepared for. That's one. The other is if only women are living together, if, like, there are two women living together or a single woman living together. The one thing is what Arundhati was saying, that, you know, you are sexualized and there is that. But the fact of the matter is also that people will find you an easy target, basically. So, like, I have had friends who are living by themselves. People have found it easier to sort of attack them or come to their house and start yelling at them because there are no men living in the house. But the point is, after that, we sat down and we discussed that should we go or file a complaint with the police? And one of the major conversations that we were having was that if we go to the police, 50 kinds of questions they'll ask around our sort of living styles. Ki, are, aapke ghar pe to ladke aate hain, oh, you guys drink or you guys smoke or whatever, whatever. So basically, victim blaming, of course, that you are those kind of girls who need to be attacked, basically, you know. And nobody is really, like, the state is not prepared for you. The law and order system is not prepared for women to live alone. Not at all. Unless you justify it, right? So unless you tell them ki ha main divorcee hu ya mujhe ghar se nikal diya hai ya matlab aise na something has happened to me, that's why I have to live alone, I don't have an option.
If something has happened to you, then the question is, why did this happen to you in the first place? Like, what were you doing? Like, even if you've been kicked out of your house, then obviously the question would be, but why did you get kicked out of your house? Like, why would your parents ever throw you out of your house? I had my aunts over a few months ago. They came over for lunch. I cooked. I mean, a lot of times I post a lot of photos of what I cook. So a lot of times my aunts, like, comment on it and it's like, you've never, like, cooked for us and things like that. So I was sort of like, okay, we'll make a plan and just with the aunts. So then they were hanging out and just sitting around for a while and all of that. And then it kind of got me thinking, like, none of them probably ever had a place which was just them. Because all of them pretty much moved into like with in-laws. They've always had either children or like, you know, even when children moved out, they had others to always take care of. And a lot of times they're like, oh, this is so nice and calm and peaceful. Like, I have this one aunt who's always like, someday I feel like I'll just go to your house and I'll just sit there. Really, like, women rarely have this thing in our societies that they would have just alone time. I mean, rarely do they have that in their own homes. And then just having a whole house to themselves, regardless of how small or whatever it is. No, I mean, so many people don't even have the concept of that. I mean, quite frankly, so many people, regardless of gender, have that concept of that, of having like completely empty space to be in. So yeah, there's also this inherent fear that how will that be if I am in an empty house? Like, I've also been having a lot of that conversation with women friends of mine who've been planning to either move out or for whatever reason are considering it. And like, this always comes up, like, I have never done this before, so how would it be? And like, what if I don't like it? What happens then? And then we very recently, a friend did eventually move out and she got her place. And like, I would say maybe a week before she was moving in there, she's like, she messaged and she was all like, I am starting to like have a second thoughts about this. Like, what? I've never done this. What am I going to do? How is this going to be? 2 days after she moved in, she messaged me and she's just like, I think this is what I was looking for. You know, all these conversations about, oh, I need a husband and I feel lonely and all of that. I think all I needed was just space, which is my own.
So many times I feel like when I speak to so many of the women in my life, this idea of the perfect man is actually everybody describing their perfect space. Is how do I get into a marriage where he doesn't get between me and my space and my alone time? Right? And it's like, how can he be the most unobtrusive like character? When I interact with my aunts or my mother or anybody like that, they all have put like their touches to their homes in terms of the aesthetics of the home. But the convenience of the home has always been for others. So the home isn't designed for the self. That has always to them felt like too selfish an endeavor to sort of construct a space for oneself. Because women are seen to beautify places, but they're not seen as occupiers of spaces.
I love that sentence.
Yeah.
You know, Arundhati, what you're saying, so like there's a poem by Amrita Pritam exactly saying that, you know.
Oh my God.
Legend, it goes something around, kya jiske saath hokar bhi tum akele raho, reh sako, wohi saath karne yogya hai, or something like that. It's a very nice poem. I'll send it to you. I mean, there's a poem by Amrita Pritam called Mohabbat Ki Kachi Diwar. So, I mean, when you were speaking, I was like, arey, ye to matlab, ye maine padha hai. And I was like, arey, this is a poem.
Oh my God, I swear, maine Amrita Pritam ke poems nahi padhi hai. Main plagiarize nahi kar rahi hu ideas.
No, definitely not. It just means that people in different centuries have similar thoughts. But I mean, what the other thing that was coming to me, you know, was that it's so interesting that you have such a lonely life as a woman, right? One of the things of patriarchy is that it isolates you. So you're always alone in some sense. So from that, transitioning to this choice of being alone is such a huge transition.
Oh my God, that's so true.
You know, because I personally also felt that there's so many times when you're forced into situations where living with 100 people around you, but you're consistently feeling alone because nobody is listening to you. Even with girls who I work with, like there's this friend of mine, her name is Razia, and she is forced to live with her sort of brother or her mother, and she so wants to be alone, and in that space she's always alone. I mean, there's nobody who talks to her or listens to her. She's consistently feeling like there is nobody for her. With my mother, I've seen that. Like, my father had moved out of the house when I was in first or second standard, I think, and for a very long period I've seen her living by herself, but she never liked that. because she felt alone in that space. I mean, when you guys are saying, I was like, it's very important to demarcate that and to be able to say that in a patriarchal structure, you're bound to be isolated and you're bound to be alone. And then there is a feminist understanding of being alone, right? So a more empowered understanding of living alone, the one that we are consistently discussing right now.
Yeah, I mean, that was also like my take on relationships. Like when people go, like, but aren't you lonely because you're not in a relationship? I was like, but I know how it feels like being lonely while being in a relationship. So, I mean, just because you're in a space with people does not translate into partnership or companionship. This recognition that even when I'm having a good time at my parents for a few days, this feeling of wanting to be back alone and having my space. Or even, you know, when I have friends over for a few days and it's great, and but then at a certain point, I'm waiting for my space to be empty again because I want that emptiness. Emptiness has its own peace and joy and happiness in it.
Yeah.
And I think nobody ever says that there's happiness in having empty spaces.
Yeah.
Nobody ever says that. Like, you know, like people will even ask, like, but aren't you scared of, like, ghosts?
Yeah. Oh my god, yeah, that's such a prominent question everybody asks.
But I'm like, I cannot describe this feeling of like when I'm away for a long time or when I'm around people for a long time, especially because I work in research. So a lot of times when I'm doing field work, it's like continuous interaction for days with people. And that's, I think, one of those times when I really realized, like, I walk into an empty house, the amount of peace I feel just like having to walk into an empty house. Like, there, I know there's no one here. I know no one else is going to be here until I want someone to be here. And I think that itself is, I think that control of when next I get to interact with someone is completely dependent on me is huge, because I don't think we get that ever in our society. And I used to be someone, you know, who used to hate like eating alone. And the last time I had spent so much time alone was when I was depressed and, you know, in a bad marriage and things like that. So from that being a memory to this being the other flip side of what I love now, I think that I wouldn't have known that that would be something that would come out.
We have so many colleagues, Deepa and I, whose first question, who can't even sleep by themselves. Like, for them, this question keeps coming up every time we speak. Why would you choose that? Like, to them, they look at this life and they're like, that is what you choose after everything at your disposal in the world? You are choosing that?
It's a slight bit of pity also there that, oh my God, I'm sad for you that you have to be like this. Yeah.
There's no overt romanticization on either side, but where is the conditioning and where is the deconditioning, I wonder, you know, in that interaction, because they're fully convinced that we are just like completely off our rockers to be like romanticizing this emptiness. Yeah.
And also, like, I personally feel that, I mean, your mental health has a huge role to play in being able to make such a decision, right? I decided to live alone for my mental health, for my mental peace. And then I have also struggled with my mental health because I started living alone, right? Like, both of the things have happened. On days when I'm, like, properly anxious or, like, just physically sick, for that matter, I've always felt that, you know, living alone is not the best idea. Like, I've had that conversation with Arundhati and I'm like, I have fever and I have nobody here to cook food for me. And I'm like, I don't want to live like this, you know?
Yeah.
And then the days when I'm like in really good mental space and, you know, not waking up with anxiety, and those days are great. Like, I really like just being by myself in the house. And sometimes being by myself in the house helps me to not be in that anxiety, you know, because I don't have people around me to sort of induce that anxiety. So, like, I used to live with alone, and then I started living with, I had a flatmate for a year who was dealing with, clinical depression. And she would love being alone generally, but there would also be times where I would leave the house and, And then she would just, you know, either something would hit her or like just the fact that she's completely alone, you know, would be triggering for her. And then I would come back to a house where she would just not be able to pick herself up. So, I mean, I remember there was a conversation that would happen that I would think about it, that would leaving her completely alone be a good decision for her as well? Because now I see that I've had severe episodes of anxiety, and I felt that had I had one person here, just like in that moment, help me sort of pick my energy, it would have been probably a little better than what it turned out to be for whatever 5 days or 6 days. And you might have your support system. Like, I have very strong support systems around me. Like, I have amazing friends. My family is also like comparatively quite supportive, but they're all on like phone calls and stuff. And then there are days when I just don't want to do a phone call. I don't want to text somebody. And people can really not support you enough over a text or a call. Like, they also don't know what to say over it. I don't know what they should be saying to me over a text or a call. So it's a very tricky thing to sort of figure out, and it's a very fine line. So as Arundhati said, there's no romanticization on either side.
Yeah. I think that was also something in more recent years I realized I'm not very good at asking people to do things for me. So I think that was also something I learned, that if I did want like company, I have to ask for it. Because there wasn't like, you couldn't just go sit in front of the TV and there'll be 2-3 people sitting there, right? So if I did want to see people, I would have to be the one to say it.
But at the same time, I feel like that was also something I had to train myself with, in terms of when I am living around people also right now. I still have to ask, I find, in terms of what it is that I need them to show up for. Otherwise, it's like unsolicited general presence in life is okay, fine. But sometimes you need a very specific kind of presence for what it is that you're going through. And that's still something that I find myself having to consciously articulate, that process of asking takes a really long time if you're not comfortable with asking, because you're so much like, no, I'm self-sufficient, I'm fine. like I've built this nice halo around myself and this aura around myself that I'm completely okay by myself. So now, is seeking is difficult, yeah. But I can imagine how much harder that is when you bring in like a physical separation between that support system and yourself.
Yeah, I think what you said, like, there is no romanticization on other side. But I think just the concept that living alone is thought to be like crazy. Why would you do it? Kind of a concept. I think that is just it. Even now, like, we don't consider that to be a choice or a way of life. And especially for women, like, there's no good reason to do it. And I think that probably is the biggest part of unlearning it for yourself. I mean, of course, there's the whole social issues and the challenges of finding a place, of dealing with these guardians, and of course security and all of that. But I think a huge part is the concept that we don't consider it to be a choice for ourselves. I don't know when it'll become normalized as obvious choice that you could choose this as a way.
I think the day it actually starts getting accepted as a choice, all these struggles that we've discussed will automatically just, you know, get better. Because I think the day society starts understanding generally that this is an okay thing to do, everything else will start falling in its place, because that's just an acceptable way of living. So, I mean, the struggles that we've discussed is basically around the fact that people are not prepared for it. So then as individuals also, and structurally also, and hence we have all the struggles around like convincing ourselves and other people around us and the systems around us that, I want to be by myself and I have every right to be by myself. So,
and that is so much located in seeing women outside of family structures, so either natal families or marital families. The moment you can see a woman being a unit by herself, that is when all of this will become possible, because it's only in relationships that women are understood and defined. And until you start thinking of women as units in themselves, entire family units in themselves, how do you create a world or structures for that system? It just won't happen. Thank you. This was lovely. So much fun.
Thank you. I'm glad we eventually got to do this. Like, we've been talking about this for like 3-4 months, I think.
I know. But thank you. This is nice. This is fun. Thank you for joining us this week. We put out new episodes every Friday. You can find us on Instagram at @FirstWithFeminism. You can email us at firstwithfeminism@gmail.com. We're on every podcasting platform. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, which is the only place you can leave us a review. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.